This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and of course this evening they're the views of our guest, Paul DeLoria, and we're going to be talking about 9-1-1, what really happened that day. And, you know, it's so difficult to understand that everything that has transpired since that time, the war in Afghanistan, the tragic war, the death and destruction we're seeing in Iraq, all dates back to that day in September of 2001, when we witnessed and saw the Twin Towers come down, and the attack on the Pentagon, the destruction of Flight 93 over Pennsylvania. The events of that day are clear in the minds of many people, and of course we've certainly been told this was all related to Osama bin Laden and having gotten some 19 hijackers to outwit the entire intelligence agencies of the United States, the 14 intelligence agencies we have, on which you spend $40 billion a year, and these 19 terrorists were able to commandeer those planes and crash them to the buildings and then bring the buildings down. But what happens if that's not what happens? Certainly if you go to the FBI webpage and you Google in on your computer, the FBI 10 Most Wanted Men, and pull up the picture of Osama bin Laden, why, you'll find out that the FBI doesn't even mention what happened on September 11th, 2001. Because apparently people have talked to them and they said, well, we have no evidence he was involved. So what then did really happen that day? Is it possible we haven't been told the truth? But I hope you will, of course, take the time to go to the FBI webpage, 10 Most Wanted, pull down the FBI poster, read it for yourself, and understand the FBI has no evidence that Osama bin Laden was involved. So with that as the background, let's go to Paul. Hi, Paul. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well, Stan. Quite the introduction, and one that I find that I got introduced also on actually September 11th, 2001.
All right. Why don't you tell us what happened and how it was that you actually got involved in this?
Well, I was in, actually, on that day, I was in Maui about to leave on a flight. I was at a book conference. I was in the process of publishing my first book, and there was a large book conference there, and I was at the end of it, and I was getting ready to pack for my flight out. I got a call from my girlfriend who said, basically, you're not going anywhere. And so I was on a remote part of the island, and I went to another part of the island, Cross Island, to a place called Paia. It's on the North Shore. It's a wonderful little town, and they have this funky kind of western bar there that has a long oak bar with a whole bank of television sets. And so I drove over to that Charlie's Bar and sat down next to a young couple who were in total shock as to what was unfolding on the television set. And I saw at that time there were replays, and they were showing the smoking towers. And then, you know, they were totally distraught, and he was telling me that they were on their honeymoon, and he was a bike messenger, and his route was the Twin Towers. And then all of a sudden, they started showing people jumping from the towers, and they started sobbing, and I was just so freaked out. I just stood up, and as I stood up, right standing next to me was this guy about 6'2", nice wool pants and a nice silk shirt, very kind of un-Charlie-esque,
Hold that thought right there. Okay, go right ahead, Paul.
And basically, right at that moment, President Bush got on the television, and he pointed to President Bush, and with a lot of anger, he said, "Look at that beady-eyed SOB." And I looked at him, and I said, "What?" and he says, "You heard me. He knew, he knows, and he's a part of this." And I said, "What?" And he says, "That's right." And he looked at me straight in the eyes, and he said, "I'm with a special division of the CIA, and they sent me here to chill out because I couldn't take what was going down." And I said, "What? What are you talking about?" And he says, "That's right. It's a government setup, and they have plans." And I said, "What?" And he said, "Look," he says, "if anyone heard anything of what I just told you, I'm a dead man." And he looked at me again, right in the eyes, and he said, "And so are you." And I said, "What?" And it was just so bizarre to see, to get into the shock of seeing all that was unfolding on the television set. And then right at that moment, they showed one of the towers collapsing. And as I looked at the television set, and as I turned back around, and the guy was gone. And it haunted me, what he had said, and I just couldn't believe it. I just couldn't piece it together that our government would actually be behind something like this. And I only told my girlfriend when I got back. But later on, I started to just do some digging, and I found out about the Carlyle Group. And I found out about Bush Sr.'s role in armaments deals. And then I started digging further and finding out about the Bush family and their history. And then shortly after that, Fahrenheit 9/11 came out. And I said, "Oh, my God, could it be so?" And then I started. Then I saw an early clip of Loose Change, and that's to me is when it turned, and I started to really understand the full scope of what's happening. And then I started digging a lot more into the Federal Reserve, finding out about all the history of false flag operations, finding out about the CIA and FBI's role in counterintelligence and what they've been doing in other countries. And it just opened up this whole other door of understanding, and that delusion that has been spread over my eyes for so long started to get lifted. And as it did, that's when I started to get involved in writing, and I started to write my second book at that time, which I had finished last year, and it's called Bearer of Light, A Catalyst for Global Change, and it's about these shifts, but doing so and working with these shifts in a positive and uplifting way and utilizing community.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We're going to be right back, Paul. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Paul DeLoria, and we've been talking about how he came to be doing what he's doing today. He is actually working in more or less public relations organizing for the 911 Truth Committee, but he tells an amazing story of how he got involved, and of course many of you did not hear his story because we went to a break. So I'm going to ask him to repeat what he had told us when we were off the air. And basically, he was in a bar in Maui on the morning of September 11th, and there was, of course, a couple sitting next to him who were rather frantic because the man who was there on his honeymoon, he delivered to the Twin Towers, and he's seeing those buildings come down. But there was a man sitting at the bar next to Paul, a man 6'2", certainly stocky and built. And I want you to tell exactly what he said to you that morning, that when the president came on, President Bush came on television, and of course he remarked. What was his remark?
Well, Stan, it shocked me because all of a sudden when the image of Bush got on, he said, "Look at that beady-eyed SOB." And he said it with a lot of anger. And I turned to him, and then he said, "He knew, he knows, and he's a part of this." And I said, "What?" And I said, "You heard me. This is part of a bigger plan." And I said, "What are you talking about?" And he just looked me again straight in the eye, and he said, "I'm part of a special division within the CIA, and they sent me here to chill out because I couldn't take what was going down." And, you know, still in shock, he said that if anyone found out what he said, he's a dead man. And looking at me again, he said, "And so am I." And then they showed the images of the towers going down. I turned my head and looked at the television set as they showed those images, and again, that furthered the shock, and then when I turned around, he had left.
And of course, you never saw him again, and I don't even know who he was or what happened to him, but this was the first thing that made you aware that something, you know, was wrong in the world. And of course, Paul tells the story of, you know, how eventually he began to look into what was going on. First he repudiated this idea, rejected the thought it could not be true, and then he saw a couple of motion pictures, Fahrenheit 9-1-1, Loose Chains, and he began to question everything he believed. And it is so difficult for most of us to believe that the could be things going on in the world we don't understand, that there could be people in government that would do terrible things that would result in the deaths of thousands of Americans. For instance, the Gulf of Tonkin incident. The Gulf of Tonkin incident that involved us in Vietnam never occurred. And if you go up and you can research this on the internet, and even Robert McNamara, the Secretary of Defense, now acknowledges it just didn't occur. And 58,000 American boys were sent to Vietnam to suffer and bleed and die for a Gulf of Tonkin incident that was staged. It didn't occur. We were lied to, and 1 million South Vietnamese died, and 2 million North Vietnamese died, but nobody's ever been held responsible. And how many other Vietnam veterans have had their lives destroyed psychologically or physically or due to the Agent Orange? And so these things have happened over and over again. This is how you get people into war. You have to have an incident. So pick up a story there, Paul. Anyway, you eventually became aware that things were happening. You wrote a second book, and you've been dedicated to this battle and trying to educate people ever since then, haven't you?
I certainly have, and presently I am the grassroots coordinator for the 911 Truth Movement. And presently we have over 200 grassroots groups throughout the United States. And I must say that even though we're dealing with some very heavy and depressing issues, that I feel so uplifted when I'm connecting and working with these different groups. I mean, it's really heartening to see people coming together, you know, just out of their goodness of their heart, of their concern and compassion for others, get out on the streets to raise 911 truth signs or impeach now signs or starting to wear orange armbands to show some unity. All these different things that people are collaborating and working with, to me, is very hopeful. And that is the way we're going to get our country back. I've been shocked for several years as I kept on digging and learning about the collusion of big business, government, media, and some religions. And as I see that the massive deception that has been poured on society and how we fell for it, you know, it's been quite a challenge to start to talk to and communicate about really the truth of what's really going on, because people are so conditioned. I mean, they've done their psychological operations quite well and have conditioned so many people to just label people as crazy conspiracy theorists if they come up with this type of talk. And yet, these are really the true patriots who are really trying to fight tyranny, and the true tyranny is happening right here on our soil. And it really does require us to come together and work together as community. So one way you can do that, that I would encourage the listeners to come and participate, is just check out 911truth.org, and they have grassroots groups there. And you can sign up, and as you sign up, then we'll tell you about other groups that are in your local area that you can also participate with. And there's listing of also groups in that area with phone numbers. So that we encourage people to come together and collaborate, work with others, and make this whole process that we're in right now supportive and uplifting and even fun. And it can't be that, because our group here in Western Massachusetts, we've been having a lot of fun in some of the events that we're doing. We're doing picnics, and we're doing fundraisers, we're doing bake sales, we're getting out every Wednesday and doing signs for Honk to Impeach. We're showing movies and having great discussions. We have in our group, we have three people who each have their own radio show. So, Stan, as you're doing, it's about getting the media back. And also we've started our own little TV show with the Community Access Television called Truth Search. So there are many ways that we can come together and work together and make it fun and engaging and also educate the population around us as to what's happening.
And, of course, the thing is that we have a left, we have a right, we have a conservative, we have a liberal, we have Republicans, we have Democrats, but we have to realize that we're all Americans. We're bound together by a desire to preserve this country, and certainly we can work out our differences, and sometimes people, as they begin to analyze what's going on, will change their views. But the important thing is to bring the truth out, what really happened on September 11th, and, of course, this is going to lead, I fear, unless there is something significant happens, to an expansion of the war in the Middle East, to actually an attack on Iran. Of course, the administration claims it's only going to last for 6 days, and then it's going to be all over. We're going to have neutralized Iran. But if you attack Iran, does anybody out there in the listening audience honestly believe that Iran is not going to retaliate in every way they can? And if we may drop some tremendous bombs there, and we may be able to have, you know, just a very selective bombing of Iranian sites, but we're going to kill a lot of people. They have actually 30,000, ton bombs. I mean, unbelievably large bombs that they can actually drop, and they'll just destroy everything in the region. But once you start a war, you never know how that war is going to end. But it all began on September 11th. We had to do something, or they had to do something, to get the American people to be willing to go to war. You had to have an incident, and there may be some more incidents. Who knows what they're going to do? But, of course, people must at least question, have we been told the truth? Does the government ever lie to the public? And if it does, if they lie about one thing, can we believe what they say about other things? Can we believe the story they told us about Jessica Lynch, you know, fighting their young, heroic woman, fighting until the last bullet was gone from her gun, or Pat Tillman, you know, fighting there, fighting the enemy bravely until he was gunned down by the enemy? And these were stories. Pat Tillman was a very courageous man. Jessica Lynch was a very courageous young woman. But the stories that were put out were not true. And if they lie about that, well, they lie about what happened on September 11th. And if that was a lie, then everything that's happened since then has been totally unnecessary. And it's so important that the American people understand that propaganda is a vehicle by which they control the reality of the American people. In fact, there's a wonderful book written by Edward Bernays in 1928, The Father... Father of modern day propaganda, and he's the one who designed all the ads for cigarettes to get women to smoke cigarettes, and as a result killed millions of women. But Edward Bernays wrote in 1928, "We are governed, our minds are molded, our tastes form, our ideas suggested, largely by men we have never heard of." And unfortunately, that's what goes on today with the controlled media. And if we can convince people of one thing, and that is the media is controlled. That's why what Paul is doing and the people in his group are doing is so important. And other people try to get the American people to think and realize.
And we have to communicate on that grassroots level, Stan, to really get the message out, because they control the mainstream media. So it's crucial at this stage that we come together and work together as a community and spread the message and word of what's really happening and what's really going on, so that we can lift this thick delusion that has been laid on us.
Right. We'll be back in just a moment talking to Paul DeLoria. Well, Paul, do you get a chance to do a lot of national radio programs, or mostly just local programs?
Some national, sure. As of late, especially.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Through the controlled media, he was saying that in New Hampshire, how many cities have voted?
There were 42 towns that voted for impeachment.
Okay, fine. And I hope.
And in western Massachusetts, we had 20 towns voted for impeachment.
But of course, you're not going to hear this through the controlled media. The last thing they want to do is certainly do anything to let the American people know the discontent that there's out there. They want to keep people just going along and concerned about the coming football season and concerned about Paris Hilton and Paris Hilton's grandfather now has disowned her. She's going to supposedly not be participate in the family fortune. Oh my goodness, isn't that important news? Shouldn't we be emphasizing that rather than so many of the other truly important stories? So they divert our attention very effectively. And what other things are going on, Paul, because you're on the cutting edge of what's taking place?
Well, we have been, again, working more and more with different groups, different activist groups, to support collaboration. I think that is very important. And if the listeners are out there or part of an activist group, I encourage you to reach out to other activist groups, too, and share certain strategies together and actions. It is through this unity that we will make a difference and that we will get our country back. But we must come together and work together collaboratively for that to happen. So anything that you can do to start to connect with other groups, again, I'll mention that 911truth.org has a lot of wonderful information to educate you. There's handouts. There are a lot of DVDs that you can purchase there at the store. And there's also grassroots group that you can connect with, and you can find out what active groups are in your area, or if there isn't one, you can sign up and we'll get in touch with you on how to start a group in your local area. And as I've been seeing, that coming together and working together as a community is something that is so uplifting and supportive that we need that encouragement, we need that positive energy to deal with this level of darkness that we're facing right now. And it is very depressing for so many people to start to realize the horrendous crimes that are being committed. I mean, this genocide. I was in our meeting that we had in Philadelphia. We had Bob McAvey, one of the family members of who lost his son at Twin Towers, and he shared his pain about his loss of his son with the group. And then, you know, after he shared this great sorrow, he shared his anger and his concern and his upset and his outrage at what our government did when he found out that they were behind his son's death. And then I took that pain and that outrage, and I just started reflecting it in terms of what's happened in Afghanistan. And imagine not only the son's loss, but all the family members who've been affected. And then I brought that over to Iraq, and just thinking of the number of people who have been killed in this way, and the families that have suffered as part of this, it's too much for me to even grasp. And at the same time, you know, it touches my compassion, and it urges me to move forward. But at the same time, what really inspires me to do that and to keep moving is connecting with other people in these positive ways. Other people who share that same concern and outrage and compassion for their fellow man, that, you know, it makes them get off their butt and get out there and distribute DVDs, distribute flyers, bring people over to their homes so that they can watch some of those documentaries on 911 Truth. And there's so many of them. There are over 40 now that are available, and some of them are extremely good that I would highly recommend. And you can get many of those at the store at 911truth.org. But you know, with all of this happening, you know, that it is through our collective efforts that we will make a difference and make this shift and change. I'm so convinced, especially as I'm working with so many different groups, and I see the positiveness of their coming together.
Well, I know there are people all across America who perhaps 3 years ago had just accepted the official government line. And then something has happened. Maybe they've watched up on the Internet the pictures of the Building 7 come down, noticing how the center of the building collapses first and then the base of the building. Now, that is typical of a controlled demolition. That way it implodes inward rather than falling outward.
There are 10 different characteristics of controlled demolition.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, Paul, why don't you go ahead and talk about the controlled demolition here. Go right ahead.
Well, there are 10 characteristics of controlled demolition, including falling at nearly free-fall speed and the buildings collapsing right into their footprint. And as you mentioned, with Building 7, you have the crimp right in the middle. That's also characteristics of many. But the flashes and the explosions that were heard consistently by the first responders. If you've ever heard Willie Rodriguez speak, you know, you can, you know, really get a sense of what really went down as he was the last person out alive of the North Towers. So there's overwhelming amount of evidence that indicates that 9/11 was an inside job. And as you understand that, for example, Marvin Bush was in charge of Securicom, which was the security organization that was in charge of the Twin Towers.
Now, who is Marvin Bush?
One of the Bushes, the brothers, the brother of George, one of the brothers of George.
He was in charge of, or he was working for the company that controlled security for the Twin Towers?
That is correct.
Isn't that a coincidence?
Quite a coincidence. And, you know, and you find out things like, for example, Bush Sr. the night before was with Osama bin Laden members who were part of the Carlyle Group the night before, and many of the Carlyle Group were there in Washington watching this whole thing unfold on television. So you kind of see, you know, you can start to piece together so many of these different events and facts you can see why they've been wanting to cover this up and cover it up as best as they possibly can. So that's why when anyone comes out in the media, like Rosie O'Donnell, for example, and even starts to mention or hints at it, like Don Imus did, you know, that they will all of a sudden be found that they're out of a job or that they're being ridiculed as crazy people. And that's part of the strategy. And I think that we just have to realize that this is the media conglomerate doing their thing to prevent us from really understanding what has really gone down on 9/11. Because it's a catalyst, and they realize that. It's their Achilles heel. And it is exposed. And there is enough evidence, there's plenty of evidence, that shows that, you know, everything from thermite, which is basically phosphorus and thermite combined, which was used to cut the steel. And so the chemical residue, the fingerprint of that, has been left on the steel.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and as Paul was just talking about, there's so much evidence. One of the things he talked about was thermite, which is, of course, what you use to cut steel. It'll cut through it just like cutting through butter. There was evidence, of course, of thermite had been used on the Twin Towers to take out those 47 major vertical uprights. You could have the buildings pancake at a few floors, but how would you be able to cut through these steel girders that are holding the building up in the very center at every level so rapidly that the building would fall at the speed of gravity? There'd be resistance to the fall, only there was no resistance to the fall.
Well, Stan, all you have to do is go to the 9/11 Commission report, and then the way they dealt with it is that they denied the existence of those main core steel beams, and that's how they got around it. Amazingly so. They just denied the existence of them.
Well, because we know that those main steel beams were there because that was what they had to get rid of, and they immediately got everything out of there without allowing anybody to investigate it, to look for forensic evidence. It was taken out, but they limited the pictures that were taken, and they took it off immediately to be shipped off to China to be melted down, just like they did after the destruction of the Murrah building in Oklahoma City. They would not allow anybody to examine the evidence on the murder site. And all I would point out is that there were 1,100 bodies of the victims of what happened that day that had never been found. Now, you'd expect if the buildings had pancaked, why the bodies would have simply been compressed, squashed, is a term but they would have still been there. But there are over 11 or almost 1,100 bodies that have just disappeared. They would have been squashed when the building collapsed, but or were they vaporized when the building exploded, because almost everything turned to dust. And how could that have happened if the building was just collapsing? So go ahead, pick up the story there, Paul.
Well, all you have to do is look at slow-motion pictures of the collapse of the Twin Towers, and you can see the squibs, those puffs of smoke coming out right when the explosions occur, and they were like 30, 40 floors below the actual collapse of the building. So you can just, the evidence is there if you take the time just to look and study, and you can understand why these buildings came down at free fall speed then. Otherwise, it would have been impossible. It would have been at least 96 seconds if it was due to this pancake theory that they've tried to put out. And, of course, the core steel center of it would still remain intact. And, of course, that was obliterated because of all the explosions and thermite. So, you know, you look at the evidence of that, and even if you go to the Pentagon and look at the size of the hole in the Pentagon compared to the actual profile of the plane, it just doesn't match. And also, it's impossible for the plane to have flown in and not even scorch or scrape the lawn. I mean, you just keep on looking at the evidence one after the other, and their unwillingness to release any of the footage. I mean, they did release a few frames that just showed an explosion, the tail end of an explosion, but showed nothing about a plane coming into it. And they had it well surveyed with a lot of cameras. So, you know, again, I don't know what it's going to take for the citizens of the United States to wake up to this reality. I think part of it is that it's just so horrific to think that those in power would actually do such a thing to their citizens.
Well, of course, we saw that the Gulf of Tonkin didn't occur. 58,000 American boys died, and nobody has ever been held responsible for lying to the American people about the Gulf of Tonkin. If they would kill 58,000 American boys, why should we be surprised it killed 3,000 or almost 3,000 American citizens on September 11th? Because human life has very little value to some people. Some people have a different worldview, because I believe they worship a different God. Well, go on, Paul. Certainly, do you think that there is a growing awareness among a lot of the people who initially would have rejected these concepts?
Well, absolutely, and I see it that I think one of the things that really has boosted this awareness is the realization of what happened when the Democrats came into power. And, you know, as Cindy Sheehan was so disgusted with the Democrats and came to the conclusion that they're all part of one system that is controlled by the military-industrial complex, and that this military-industrial complex has their hands around this country's throat. And that's how she described it. And I think that, and did so, I think, fairly accurately. And a lot of people who were in the peace movement, for example, started to come over to the 911 Truth Movement and embrace this platform also, when they started to realize that, yes, they were behind this, and this is the reason why we're at war, and this is the reason why we've broken off from peace that we were experiencing, at least partially. And so this awareness now that the Democrats really are not really part of a different party system, but really part of this collusion of big business and government and media. And I think that is bringing people more and more together and realizing that they can't really go through it through the normal political process, realizing that we have election fraud, that many of our voting machines that don't have paper trails are can be easily manipulated. I think people realizing that many of the candidates are basically saying the same type of thing, and that it's the same type of game, and it's being sponsored by the same type of corporate media giants, and that and candidates like Ron Paul or Dennis Kucinich, you know, have a tough road to hoe. But again, they stand for a much more truthful, honest platform that really addresses the key issues. And I think, and hopefully more and more people are starting to realize that and not get into this kind of hyper stuff that comes off the media through television and the way that gets manipulated through advertising.
Well, I think that anybody who stops and thinks about the 2004 elections, when you have a Republican candidate who comes from a secret society called Skull and Bones, and you have the Democrat who comes from the same secret society. Now, there are only, at the most, maybe 1,000 members of this secret society alive in the United States today, and two of them are running for the presidency. One is a Republican, the other is a Democrat. And when Tim Russert asks them, you know, each one of them, what about Skull and Bones Society? Both of them told them that the fraternity was so secret they couldn't discuss it. Well, I belong to a college fraternity, you know, and certainly I'm not afraid to discuss, you know, what we did in my college fraternity. There was no, I mean, it was all make-believe and fun, but Skull and Bones is not fun. People only have to, you can go to WilliamHKennedy.com, WilliamHKennedy.com, and there you'll find, of course, a filmed version of a replication of the initiation ceremony of Skull and Bones as the people bow before Lucifer. You'll actually see it. The man who filmed this risked his life to do it. WilliamHKennedy.com. There is a spiritual force that energizes the people in this one ultimate secret society, the most powerful secret society, one of the most powerful secret societies in America today. And isn't it interesting that both candidates came from the same secret society? The chances of that happened would be about 1 in a trillion here. If you believe that, why, you probably believe anything. But do any of the people in the 911 Truth movement, do you think, really understand the spiritual dimension of what's happening today, Paul?
Well, I think that a lot of people are seeing that this whole thing is a catalyst, and a catalyst that can bring us to a new age of opening of spirituality on this planet. Sometimes we have to face the dark before we get into the light, and sometimes we need the catalyst to really push us and move us to a whole understanding and way of being. And this awareness that has been happening with a lot of people, that awakening, has been, as a result, more and more people are coming together in community and working together and being together, creating more self-sufficiency together as they start to see what is coming down the pike. So to me, I look at this, you know, in a positive way, in that it is something that can bring us to a new understanding of how society can work. It is an opportunity for us to cast off this dark aristocracy that has so much control over the resources of this planet, and also to eliminate these people who are trying to subjugate not only us in the United States, but they're doing so throughout the world, and to throw off these shackles and this darkness will be liberating. And I think that's part of what we're entering in this new age, this new liberation. But again, in order for that to happen, we have to come together and work together as community.
You know, because the thing is that sometimes people can get really, of course, misled as they get into this as well. It's a shame we couldn't get them all to listen to our programs and read our material and begin to understand how this all fits together, because I've been studying this for 47 long years, or 45 years, and I think we have a pretty good evaluation of how this fits together. We certainly, awakening is fine, we just don't want to awaken to the wrong sources, but that's not your job, because that's mine, is to reach as many people as I can and point them into a real understanding of the forces that energize. You refer to them as the Black Nobility. They've been known as, of course, the Black Nobility for many centuries, as they operate out of Europe and of course, operate out of the United States under any circumstances. If you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for Paul, we'll probably have a time for one or two questions at the most. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. But that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Paul is totally dedicated to getting the information out. And there are many people within the 911 Truth Committee and movement who are dedicated, doing everything they can to try to get people to understand that most of what we believe isn't true. Now it's your job and my job to try to use this determination and this dedication to point people in the correct direction. Because, of course, once you begin to lose confidence and belief in what you believed in the past, why, there's going to be another belief system that's going to come in, and we would hate to have that going in the wrong direction. So under any circumstances, we have people on the right, the left, the conservative, the liberal, but they all question what's happened. And I think we should all question what's happened, because we are moving, in my estimation, towards expanding the war in the Middle East. And shortly before the Senate actually went off for recess, why, Senator Lieberman got a resolution passed 97-0 in the Senate that would condemn Iran for the involvement in supplying weapons that were being used in Iraq against American soldiers. The term was complicity in the supplying weapons to the Iraqis that were killing American soldiers. That, for all intents and purposes, was a green light. That was permission for the president to attack Iran during the recess period. That's why this next few weeks is going to be a very, very dangerous time. Well, let's go to Ed, who's actually calling from Calgary, up there in Alberta. Hi, Ed, how you doing?
Good evening, Dr. Stan, and good evening to your guest.
Right.
Good evening.
What is the stampede up there in Calgary?
Oh, it just went. It went a couple of weeks ago.
All right, fine. That's an international rodeo up there. Go ahead.
I'm sure glad I got through here, because I worked in the mines for 20 years as a driller and handled explosives like I couldn't believe, you know. And I know what didn't happen at 911. It wasn't the airplanes that brought those planes down. And I'm using the experience of explosions pushing out in all directions and seeking the least resistance. And when I saw the 54 of the buildings collapse, I saw the debris cascading out from all four sides of the towers. I said, that's a controlled explosion. It's from the center of the building. Also, both planes did not hit the building square. In fact, one hit it in such an angle it came out the adjoining side, meaning that only half the building was in jeopardy. Anyway, I just thought I'd bring that expertise out, and I should mention the Oklahoma City bombing, too. And when you look at what happened to that building, the explosion was inside the building and down in the basement. I don't know who did it, but I know it wasn't a truck, and neither were those planes responsible.
All right, fine. Well, thanks so much for your call, Ed. I really appreciate it. And, Sydney, if you worked in the mines for 20 years and handled explosives, I'm sure you understand that what most people don't understand is that what we saw, or what we thought we saw on September 11th, was what really happened. God bless. Thanks so much for calling.
Good night.
Good
Thank
night.
You.
And, of course, Ed's...
It is amazing when you look at the debris that was coming as the towers collapsed and how far that debris was shed out, and huge beams were blown out. So that's a great observation.
And, of course, we suggest that we have a number of DVDs on this, where you can see those buildings come down again and again. And as you see them come down, you see them falling at the speed of gravity. I mean, you wouldn't fall at the speed of gravity. There'd be resistance. Unless, of course, all the major structural support had been destroyed beforehand. And that was the story of William Rodriguez, who heard the explosions in the basement of the North Tower before the plane hit the top of the North Tower. And we actually have our interviews with William Rodriguez, and I will tell you later how you can get hold of those. Well, Paul, certainly, do you have a parting thought for our listeners here?
Well, I do. There's a couple of things. First of all, if they would like a real good read on bringing spirituality into this movement and using community as a foundation, I would recommend Bearer of Light, A Catalyst for Global Change.
Now that's your book, isn't it?
And that's my book that I'm plugging. And that's you can purchase that at www.beareroflight.com or at 911truth.org.
All right.
And also I'd recommend people to, again, plug into the 911truth.org site and find out about the grassroots groups, how you can plug into a local group in your area. Again, it's through community that we will really get our country back, and we need to work together to make strides again.
All right, you hold on there. We'll be back in just a moment here to wrap up this evening's program. Well, Paul, we have 3 minutes here at the very end where we just let you go ahead and say whatever you'd like to say before we let you go.
Well, Stan, I just want to first of all thank you and for all the good work that you're doing. It's so crucial that we get this information out and we inform in a way that can be engaging to the public. So I see that you've been doing that, and I'm so appreciative of that. And for all of us to do little things, just wear orange bandanas. Again, connect with different community groups, activist groups. Get out there and distribute DVDs. There's a lot of wonderful books that can inform you, and just a lot of different articles that are out there. Just all you have to do is Google 911 Truth, and you'll be able to get a ton of information that's been put out as to what's happening not only on that day, but what's happening in terms of these operations, secret operations by our government, the government within the government. And again, to me, I've been getting more and more uplifted as I plug into community and work with other groups, and I would encourage other people to do the same. Even though this may be very depressing to initially find out what's going on, it can be very uplifting to work with other people and works and so in a supportive way. Because we are making a difference, and it's the people here in the United States that are empowered to make this shift, because another country invading us is not going to accomplish this. They're not going to be successful, but we can be successful by coming together and getting out on the streets and protesting and supporting shift and change with our infrastructure of our government. We desperately need to do that.
Well, of course, the battle is here in the United States, and as America goes, so goes the world, because America is the mightiest nation militarily in the entire world. And the America, of course, for many years has dominated the world. We have our troops in over 130 nations. We have an empire. That is the purpose, of course, of the invisible government and the black nobility, to create a world empire and eventually, of course, bring that under the control of the one world government, the new world religion, and, of course, the new world leader. So this is why I stay, what I do, and I hope many of you out there will become involved, as Paul is urging you to. Paul, I want to thank you so very much for everything that you and the good people in the 911 Truth Movement are doing, and hope you'll continue doing it. And, of course, we hope to be in contact with other members and, of course, to share our knowledge with them. Good night. God bless you.
Thank you, Stan.
Bye-bye.
Night.
All right, fine. Well, we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up the program. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and it's so very, very easy when you find out that you've been lied to your whole life, that there really is an invisible government that does have a secret agenda, that controls the media, controls the great corporations, that controls certainly the great tax-exempt foundations, the educational system. And, of course, everything is based upon the banking system that allows them to create money out of nothing, to actually simply through the fractional reserve banking system create fabulous amounts of money that they can use to buy up the corporations, that they can use to buy up the media. And how do you think that when one corporation wants to buy another corporation for $50 billion. Where do you think that $50 billion comes from? And, of course, it's created out of nothing. It is one of the greatest scams in the world. You need to understand the banking system that is being used to enslave not only America, but the whole world. Our job is to educate people about the fraudulent nature of banking and of course, get back to the fundamentals where men had work, but, of course, where men could be free. And get back to these concepts of freedom under God. And who is the God that we worship? And who is the God that the other side worships? And how does it all fit together? Well, we hope you'll want to... First of all, if you're interested in what happened on 911, that you'll get some of the videos we have. I think we have 5 or 6 videos on what happened that day. If you'd like more information, call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do on a regular basis, educating people not only throughout America but all over the world about what's really going on. But to begin to understand this, and I want to mention we do have a 4-tape set that features William Rodriguez, who was the last man out of the North Tower on the morning of the attack. And it's Why Did the Buildings Come Down? And then we have another very good 4-tape or 4-CD set called 911 Update. We have got so much information on what happened that morning. Suddenly the great DVDs like 911 Press for the Truth and 911 Mysteries and certainly The Day That Changed America Forever. And if you would like to get a lot of them together, why, certainly there is a special arrangements can be made. But to put things in their proper spiritual perspective, you need to hear my talk, Brotherhood of Darkness. If you can't afford, you can go up on our website at RadioLiberty.com. We have it. The DVD is posted there on the Internet at RadioLiberty.com. Just go to the on-site videos there. But you need to see Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to see my latest DVD, which is not posted yet. It's titled Forbidden Secret. Forbidden Secret. You need to get certainly the DVDs, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, Riddles in Stone. Both of those are very professionally done by our good friend Chris Pinto. Both of them are award-winning documentaries. You won't see them on the History Channel. They'll give you the information that is kept off the History Channel, off Discovery Channel, so that you will never understand what's really going on. And then, of course, we suggest the DVD, The Atlantis Connection, with Chris Pinto tells about how America was to be the new Atlantis. The Emergence by Constance Cumby. And we have a 4-tape set by Constance. We have a DVD by Constance Cumby going into who the world leader will be, because she's been working on this for 27 years. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you want to get our 4-tape sets on, or 4-D CDs on the supernatural and Johanna Michelson's book, The Beautiful Side of Evil. And pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. Again, our number 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, this evening they're going to be the views of William Greig, and William has certainly been a senior editor for many years at the New American Magazine. Now he's writing for the other sources, the Welch Society. In fact, I did an interview just the other day with Paul Craig Roberts, who's really one of the great syndicated columnists of my nation. And Paul Craig Roberts was formerly the Assistant Secretary of the Treasury during the Reagan years. And in the course of the conversation, he was quoting a man named William Greig in something he had written recently about what was happening in our country. Well, that's the William Greig we have with us tonight. How are you tonight, William?
I'm doing very well, and I'm honored beyond description that Dr. Roberts would quote me.
Well, he greeted you very, very favorably, and you can see he was as impressed with your writing as I am. So,
that means a great deal to me.
Well, I thought you'd enjoy it. I was pleased.
Yeah.
Anyway, Sydney, what are we going to talk about this evening?
I think it'd be worthwhile to talk about the internal collapse of our imperial structure.
All right, fine. Go right ahead.
Talking about hollowing out the American Republic, just as the Roman Republic was hollowed out by corruption. This terrible tragedy that occurred yesterday in Minnesota when that I-35W bridge collapsed over the Mississippi River is a really interesting metaphor, I think, for what we're seeing. And it happens, of course, not all that far away from the second anniversary of the horrible scenes we saw down in New Orleans as a result of the Katrina hurricane disaster, where we saw a spectacle that looked an awful lot like things we've seen from third world countries when hurricanes or tidal waves or tsunamis have hit communities that have been hollowed out through official corruption and so forth. When you have this bridge collapse over the Mississippi River, it brought to mind, of all the unlikely things, a song lyric from Merle Haggard's most recent disc, Chicago Wind. There's a song on that disc called America First, and there, in one of the refrains, Merle Haggard, who's, by the way, probably the great eminence of country music, and he is certainly, I would consider, to be sort of the crown prince of country patriotism. This is the guy who did Okie from Muskogee, and When You're Running Down My Country, You're Running Up the Fight Inside of Me. You know, he's somebody who, if you cut him, bleeds red, white, and blue. He's unambiguously a patriot. And in the song America First, one of the refrains says something to the effect of, our highways and bridges are falling apart. Freedom is stuck in reverse. Let's get out of Iraq and get back on track. Let's rebuild America first. I'm not saying by quoting that we need this grand industrial policy that a lot of people of a collectivist orientation would say that we need. All day today on the left end of the dial, so to speak, talk radio shows like Ed Schultz, who's in the Midwest, I think he's in North Dakota, as sort of a populist Democrat liberal on just about every issue except for gun control and abortion, he was talking about the need for more public investment. That's not what I'm going to be saying this evening, obviously. But there is a problem that has to be addressed, and it's a direct consequence of our imperial foreign policy in many ways.
However, I think you're absolutely right, and of course we don't have money for repairing our problems, for repairing our highways, repairing our overpasses. All of our money is being spent overseas, and spent for giving literally billions of dollars to major corporations to build up the infrastructure of Iraq,
exactly.
And they never get the jobs done, and we find out that the Bechtel and many of the great corporations are taking these massive payments and they never get around to finishing it there in Iraq.
Well, the last thing they want to do is to finish these projects, because if you finish them, then there's no longer any way you can extract profit out of them. And so we're entering a phase, I can't remember who coined the expression, but we're entering a phase called disaster capitalism, in which it seems that the real growth industry consists of permanent reconstruction, whether you're talking about reconstructing countries that are new provinces of the empire, like Iraq, for instance, or what happened in Somalia in the early 1990s. There's an element of disaster capitalism present in all these so-called humanitarian interventions that are actually exercises in bombing the living daylights out of a country and then sending in people to profit from rebuilding these countries. That's where Dick Cheney made his fortune, with Halliburton and the subsidiaries of the Halliburton conglomerate. What happened in the late 1990s, 1999, when the United States, in tandem with NATO, bombed Serbia for 78 days and destroyed every bridge spanning the Danube River. You ended up with the Danube River being choked with all this debris, wiped out the power grid of what had been one of the oldest and most sophisticated cities in Europe, and a country that has historically been very pro-United States. During World War II, the Serbs rescued hundreds of airmen, kept them out of the hands of the Nazis. And of course, FDR and Aldrich Hiss and that gang repaid the Serbs by turning over the heroic Chetnik fighter, whose name eludes me right now. It'll come to me in a second.
Milosevic, I believe.
Exactly, yeah. They turned him over to be executed, and installed Franz Josef Tito as the ruler of an artificially united Yugoslavia. That's a long story, but the point is, there's a lot of profit to be made if you're in the business of destroying things to rebuild them later. And if you take a look at the people who are involved in the so-called reconstruction of our Gulf region 2 years after Katrina, it's the same group of companies that are involved in the reconstruction of the Gulf region in the Middle East.
You're talking about Halliburton, you're talking about Vector, you're talking about Fluor, you're talking the same, about three or four companies, and they're all going all over the world.
You got Blackwater Contractors providing so-called private security on government contracts, which means it's not private at all, in the New Orleans neighborhoods immediately after Katrina. You have Blackwater operators doing the same thing in certain places in Iraq. But what happened with this bridge that I found really interesting yesterday, when it collapsed, we're once again dealing with the Mississippi River, and it had been for many, many decades one of the most important strategic objectives of the Americans of the founding era to find some way to control access to the Mississippi.
Hold that thought right there, William, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William was just saying that many of our major corporations have gone all over the world involved in repairing the destruction that we've created, that we've wrought, and this would be the Fluor, or this would be Bechtel Corporation, this certainly would be Halliburton, Dick Cheney's corporation. There's only a small number of these international corporation, construction corporations, but they get the vast majority of the contracts, government contracts, to rebuild nations. So pick the story up there, William.
Well, when you're talking about the reconstruction in New Orleans, New Orleans is a strategically important city. It's a port which services one of our main import and export arteries, which is the Mississippi River. And it plays a very important role, obviously, with respect to refining crude oil into usable forms of petroleum, most importantly, of course, gasoline, but also heating oil and so forth. And at least some of the price shocks we've experienced at the pump, and when we're taking a look at our thermostats during the wintertime, that we've experienced over the last couple of years have something to do with the fact that a lot of our refinement capacity got wiped out by Katrina and the other hurricanes of 2005. But the Mississippi River was one of the strategically vital arterial choke points, if you will, during the expansion westward of the United States, and really securing access to the Mississippi and securing the port city of Louisiana, which is something, of course, that most kids remember from the War of 1812. You know, the famous Battle of New Orleans is actually fought a number of days after the peace treaty had been signed over in Belgium, if I remember correectly. And the thing is, over in Europe, I don't think it was in Belgium, but in any case, there was a peace treaty between the United States and Great Britain before the Battle of New Orleans, and you had Andy Jackson and a rather motley assortment of people keep New Orleans from falling into British hands, which was a very important strategic coup. If we were going to be expanding westward, we simply had to control access to the Mississippi River. And so it's just sort of interesting to me in a grand historical symmetry, if you will, that you have this collapse of a bridge spanning the Mississippi River today, and we don't know how many people have died. At least four have died, of course. And then you read about how something like 70,000 bridges in our country are rated unsatisfactory to unsafe, and the estimates for repair and refurbishment of these bridges, almost all of which, by the way, of course, were built on government contracts under government supervision, using the most corrupt procurement methods known to man, in all likelihood, the cost for rebuilding, refurbishing, or restoring this infrastructure runs something on the order of $188 billion, just for the bridges. That doesn't take into account, of course, the fact that our main highways and freeways are in very poor condition, and a lot of our other infrastructure is rapidly decaying, while our government's in the business of projecting power abroad and investing resources that are pretty much irreplaceable into an imperialist foreign policy that is expanding the compass of their commitments while at the same time drawing down on an ever-diminishing pool of financial resources.
And I think what's really another thing very significant is the fact that we pay a federal gasoline tax.
Exactly.
It goes into a trust fund, and they steal from that. Like,
yeah,
they steal from the Social Security Fund so that they could provide all the goodies for the congressmen and for their constituents. So they steal from the Social Security Fund, but they steal the money out of that trust fund for the repair of the highways and for repair of the infrastructure of our roadways. They steal that money rather than spending it to repair our infrastructure. And they put Jimmy Baker in prison for 30 years, you know, for stealing from one trust fund and putting the money in another, and yet that's commonplace in the United States Congress.
Yeah, since the creation of the so-called Social Security Trust Fund, which is just another general revenue pot, and it has always been that way. But the Highway Trust Fund, which, of course, is a very important part of this discussion, is something, as you pointed out, Stan, we pay for every time we fill up our gas tanks. We're paying, I can't remember how much it is, but depending upon the state you're in, the taxes you're paying on a gallon of gasoline could be in excess of 50 cents a gallon or more, depending upon if you're living, for instance, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, or some of the other cities where they have an EPA-dictated mandate for using reformulated gasoline of a certain type, and it gets even higher. But the point is that money is siphoned off, literally, from the pump, and it is sent into this huge pot of trust funds, which are used ostensibly to maintain the freeways and highways and infrastructure for motor travel. But in fact, it's used to cover deficits. It's used as a pot for embezzlement, as you point out, in order to make sure that government can keep running when it runs out of spending authority. And just this last week, the Treasury Secretary was asking for the debt ceiling to be raised again to something over $10 trillion. That's unfathomable, you know, that they would be talking about a debt ceiling something in excess of $10 trillion. But it's also, of course, a piggy bank for all kinds of petty corruption. And it's also used, and this is another key point of this whole equation, the highway trust funds are also used to bribe the state governments into accepting certain types of police state policies, whether you're talking about mandatory primary seatbelt laws, meaning that a cop can pull you over and cite you if you're not wearing a seatbelt in your car. That's something over which the government has no proper jurisdiction at all whatsoever. Whether you're talking about certain types of other roadblocks and checkpoints that are now just proliferating across the countryside. It's very rare that you don't find a checkpoint or a roadblock of some sort, particularly when they have click-it-or-ticket type enforcement actions, but for almost any other pretext you can think of, getting the police in the habit of imposing checkpoints. There is no legitimate purpose for random, regular checkpoints in a free society. That's part of the your papers please mentality that is indispensable to the creation of a police state. But they also use these highway funds to bribe state governments on behalf of such programs as Real ID. You know, this is a huge pot of money that should be going to pay for upkeep of the bridges and roads and so forth, should in the sense that that's what it's taken for, that is the pretext under which that money is stolen from us. That's not a proper constitutional function of the government, but that is the advertised purpose of it. And, of course, it's all a malignant fraud. You see a bridge collapse, and suddenly the liberals are saying, well, that means we need to have more public investment. No. What that means is that public investment is pretty much illustrated by what happened by the collapse of that bridge. That money is being diverted, it's being taken from the pump and then diverted into something that has nothing to do with the maintenance of the critical infrastructure, because that's the way public financing always works. The priorities of our rulers are not the same as the priorities of the rest of us. And, of course, one big function that is carried out by all of this is the maintenance of this same demented globalist foreign policy that is leading to situations where we end up mired in Mesopotamia at the expense of something over $500 billion so far, and it's probably going to be at least double that by the time we're finished with this misadventure, assuming it ever ends. And so they go abroad in search of monsters to destroy. They bomb countries into rubble. Then they spend a whole lot of money to pay politically connected corporations to rebuild these countries. And at the same time, of course, our country domestically, within the borders of the United States, our country is becoming more and more visibly and obviously a decaying society on the verge of third world status.
Not only that, but many of our states are selling off their infrastructure.
Yeah.
New Jersey has sold off the New Jersey Turnpike. Ohio has sold off the Ohio Turnpike. Illinois sold off the Chicago Skyway, and this is happening all across America because the states don't have enough money to fund all their giveaway programs, and so the states are selling off their infrastructure. The federal government's infrastructure is going into decay, and America is moving from a first-class nation into a second-class nation, and before long we may well be a third-world nation.
Well, we're certainly in danger, and I think this is probably something you discussed with Dr. Roberts because he's been watching this very closely. We're in danger of becoming sharecroppers within the borders of what had been an independent country. And just in the last few weeks, there has been a great deal of discussion in a lot of the financial publications about this phenomenon called sovereign wealth funds. And that's an expression I hadn't heard before about two weeks or so ago. The Economist of Great Britain, which is sort of a vaguely Fabian socialist publication in its outlook, but a pretty good news source, has been tracking the emergence of these sovereign wealth funds. And that's just a new label. That's a rebranding for nationalized investment funds. And you have countries, of course, Communist China being the biggest and most obvious, but also the various Arab Emirates over in the Gulf region, Singapore, Russia, Norway, which has a lot of oil wealth. Anytime you have a country that has a lot of oil wealth and they're benefiting right now from this huge windfall in the spike in oil prices, they have a lot of capital that they can invest in these government-controlled investment mechanisms, which generically are called SWFs or sovereign wealth funds. The thing is, these are all controlled, once again, by the political class. They're not controlled by private investors, even by nominally private investors, the sort that we see involved in a lot of these collaborative efforts with governments. These are outright controlled by these governments, almost all of which are socialist or even outright communist in inclination. And so they have this huge pool of money that they can use in order to buy up something of much greater intrinsic value than dollar-denominated bonds. So what are they going to do? They're going to start investing, as you pointed out, in American infrastructure. And now there's going to be a lot of demand for that kind of investment capital to rebuild our decaying infrastructure. That's a recipe for having our country sold out from under us at fire sale prices.
And not only that, but they're buying up many of our major corporations here.
Yeah.
20% of our major corporations are already foreign owned. Westinghouse, what could be more American than Westinghouse?
Yeah.
Well, of course, it's a Japanese corporation now. And increasingly, they're coming in here, they're buying up our corporations, and Americans are not going to be working for American corporations. Foreign corporations will be taking the profits and sending it home to their countries to benefit their people at the expense of the ever-increasingly enslaved American public. Go right ahead, will you?
You probably acquainted with Lawrence Summers of Harvard University. I can't remember if he was with the World Bank or the IMF. I seem to recall he was with the IMF. But he's somebody who's very establishmentarian in his perspective on economics. But he wrote a piece for the Financial Times of London a couple of weeks ago talking about this sovereign wealth fund phenomenon, which is, once again, where a government with a trade surplus, China being, of course, the most conspicuous example, but also any of the other countries that are involved in energy exports right now have huge foreign exchange reserves. They will put them into these great big pools of investment capital called sovereign wealth funds that are controlled by the governments. And what Summers pointed out was the following, and I quote, "In the last month, we have seen government-controlled Chinese entities take the largest external stake in Blackstone, a big private equity group that indirectly through its holdings is one of the largest employers in the United States." Think about that for a second. Blackstone is deeply involved in all kinds of hedge fund type investments. It, of course, is very deeply involved as well in the housing and refinancing, housing and mortgage refinancing industry, which is, I don't know for sure, but I suspect one of the biggest parts of our domestic economy right now. And now we find out that the Chinese government basically has taken what could be a controlling interest in this private equity group that is one of the largest domestic employers in the United States. You'd be working for Beijing if you're working for Blackstone or one of its subsidiaries. To continue now from Lawrence Summers, Gazprom, a Russian conglomerate in effect controlled by the Kremlin, has strategic interests in the energy sector of a number of countries and even the stake in Airbus. Entities controlled by the governments of China and Singapore are offering to take a substantial stake in Barclays, the great big British investment bank, giving it more heft in its effort to pull off the world's largest banking merger with ABN AMRO. So what we're seeing there is how, once again, these countries that are ruled by authoritarian governments, kleptocracies like post-Soviet Russia, which is run by the KGB, by the same people by whatever label they're now calling themselves, and communist China, which has, once again, a government that professes fealty to what they call Marxism, Leninism, Maoism, and Deng Xiaoping thought, which in practice is basically gangsterism with a light patina of indecipherable Marxist vocabulary. But they're controlling these huge investment funds and taking ownership of a lot of these interests that are deeply involved in the daily lives of anybody who does anything in, by way of financial transactions. I think in one of our previous programs I mentioned that Mr. Jackson, the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development from the Bush administration, was in Beijing just a couple of weeks ago, all but begging the Chinese to start investing in the mortgage industry, particularly in the subprime sector. And a lot of these mortgage bonds that are issued, where they securitize these mortgage debts, Alfonso Jackson was trying to interest Beijing in buying.
Yeah, they call them the CDOs, the collateralized debt obligations,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but a lot of them were backed by Ginnie Mae, which is a government-supported entity, along with Fannie and Freddie, the mortgage lenders that everybody knows about. Fannie and Freddie are actually not backed by the so-called full faith and credit of the United States, although everybody believes them to be. Ginnie Mae is, and it was that pool of securities, that pool of bonds that Mr. Jackson was trying to peddle in Beijing. But the point is...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William is talking about the sovereign wealth funds. These are government funds, investment funds, where they're going to take their excess dollars and begin investing them in the United States, buying up our infrastructure, buying up our corporations, so that foreigners are going to pretty well begin to run America. And then, of course, William was talking about how the representatives of the United States Treasury were over in Russia, literally begging the Chinese to buy some of our collateralized debt obligations, some of these bonds which are invested in the housing industry, which, of course, many of these bonds are losing value very rapidly. The Chinese are very, very smart. pretty smart businessmen.
Oh, yeah.
And they're saying, why would we want to buy bonds that are not worth what you're charging us for them?
Yeah.
So you pick up the story there.
Well, the only reason I can think of why these people would be interested in buying these bonds would be as if they wanted to take physical ownership of the assets that are involved here. And anytime you own the paper on a debt, presumably the paper is connected to something of tangible worth. And it is, we're looking at that really remarkable, I think quite revolting spectacle of a couple of weeks back when Mr. Jackson was over in Beijing. I said, well, what this means is that someday your landlord is going to be Chinese. And I don't think that that's entirely inconceivable when you take a look at the amount of money that the Chinese have to throw around, China being, of course, now the factory for the world. And you take a look at the amount of money that a lot of these oil-producing countries now have. Russia, a big oil-producing country, they're a substantial oil-producing country, but they're primarily a natural gas power, and they want to become the Saudi Arabia of natural gas. And because of the energy spike, the spike in energy prices, Russia is actually now out of debt and becoming a major player in investments. And so these people are going to be looking for something of tangible worth to invest in, something much better than depreciating paper dollars or depreciating digital dollars or investment securities which are denominated in the same. They're going to be taking a look at what we have here to offer. What we have is a pretty well-developed and pretty well-staked-out natural resources-rich country. You know, we have all kinds of natural wealth, much of it being cordoned off from development by our own central government because of the interests of certain people in locking up these resources, keeping them out of the hands of competitors, and working in tandem with environmental activists who are motivated primarily by ideological delusions. And so you have these things which have been locked away and just held in store for somebody to come along and buy up. You know, that's something, for instance, perhaps Russia and China would be interested in investing in. You're talking about huge tracts of farmland. They're buying up farmland by the tens of thousands of acres in the American Midwest, the Chinese are. You take a look at the infrastructure. Yes, it's decaying. Yes, it needs some work, but you know what? It's there. The roads have all been laid out. The bridges have been cast. These are things that can be refurbished with just the right investment of capital. So there's another possible foreign investment. Pretty soon there's not going to be anything left here, I can see, that would actually be owned by people who actually live here. So we would become that nation of sharecroppers that Paul Craig Roberts, Warren Buffett, and a number of other peoples have warned that we might become, unless we do something soon to reverse our descent into utter destitution through self-inflicted bankruptcy.
Well, I share your concern, and I think that everybody should understand that there is no instance in all history where a nation has been purchasing 6% more than it produces year after year after year, and eventually the whole system comes toppling down. And I believe this is exactly what is intended. I believe, of course, there is a plan to redistribute the wealth of the American people. I believe it's laid out in something called the Earth Charter. That you get it on the internet, where they talk about redistribution of wealth or the realignment of wealth within nations and between them nations. The term is equitable distribution of wealth within and between nations. And so why shouldn't we transfer our wealth to China, where we have so much and they have so little? Why shouldn't we retransfer our wealth to Mexico? We have so much, they have so little. And people say, that's crazy talk. And yet that's exactly what
is
happening.
It is what's happening, yeah. You know, one of the terms that you run into when you read any of the literature about international trade or international finance is something called harmonization. And often it refers to regulatory harmonization, where regulations are made uniform. But also it refers to the standard of living. We have something called downward harmonization, and that refers to reducing America's standard of living to where we're actually more akin to the common level of most of the people in the world. And that's what we're seeing here when the United States and Mexico are being sort of melded together, is that in some ways our standard of living is being dragged down to the level of Mexico's.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. our guest is William Grigg, and he is simply talking about how the living standards of America are gradually falling. People are making less money. The money they have is purchasing less. Our living standards are falling. It's not so precipitous that people are alarmed yet, but they will be as time goes by. Go right ahead.
Yep. There's a story just a few days ago, and I believe it was the Dallas Morning News, talking about how an increasing number of Americans are going to Mexico in search of health care, whether you're talking about things that are reasonably discretionary, such as dental work or radial keratotomy or other kinds of eye surgery, or fairly complicated and critical procedures involving vital functions and systems of the body, how people have found that it's actually less expensive, and there's actually more of a congenial customer service system in healthcare in Mexico than there is in the United States, which just shocked me. I'm sure this is something which turned to the surface as part of the general tumult surrounding Michael Moore's ridiculous agitprop film Sicko, where he is hymning the praises of socialized medicine and acting as if that's not what we have in the United States. I mean, what we have in the United States is a type of corporate socialism or fascism in medicine particularly, but the point I'm making here is that when it gets to the point where people are actually looking at that as a legitimate possibility, that seems to me to be a really good illustration of this downward harmonization I'm talking about, where really living standards and commercial expenses and expectations on the part of the consumer are becoming so similar on either side of the border that really, apart from matters of language and popular culture, there's really not two countries there anymore. There's basically one polyglot country along the border, what do you call it, a Mexico, or however you want to describe it. You know, Aslan is being a popular invented term of about three or four decades standing here to describe that region. But the point I'm making here, once again, is that our standard of living is being brought down systematically. I mean, the most recent book that I published was called America's Engineered Decline, and I wholeheartedly believe, and I think that my book illustrates the fact, that what we're seeing here is not just a normal decay that afflicts everything of human manufacture. I mean, we're talking about a deliberate, systematic reduction in our standard of living through the strip mining of our industrial base and the use of regulation and tax policy to drive jobs offshore, and the use of H-1B visa programs and things of that nature.
Hold that thought, William. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is William Grigg, and we're talking about the declining living standards of America, the destruction of our healthcare delivery system, systematic, intentional. Sydney, you've got more of a chance of winning the lottery today than you have of getting a back rub in an American hospital. Used to be, it was standard every evening you get a back rub. You just try to find anything like that in an American hospital today. Why? Because government has interfered with the practice of medicine, and there's no problem facing America today that a new government program won't make worse. And yet, of course, there's tremendous agitation and pressure to bring about socialized medicine in the United States. And you think medicine is bad and expensive today? You just wait till it's free. Well, before we get on, let's go. I'm going to ask William if he'll get his website out and how people can get in touch with his ministry and what he's doing.
Well, the easiest way to find what I write is to go to the Right Source Online, which is available at www.rightsourceonline.com. Once again, rightsourceonline.com, one word, and that will be the portal to take you to my blog, which is called Pro Libertate. It's usually published between 3 and 5 times a week. This week I've only published very sparingly because of a number of developments which I couldn't control. My wife has been in the hospital for a number of weeks, for instance. I've had to watch the children, and I've had to help my sister relocate to the area. She's going to be helping out with my family and my children, and so I had to help her move to a new home and things of that nature. And so my blog has been left somewhat fallow this week, but generally the blog is updated no fewer than three times a week. It's called Pro Libertate, which is Latin, and it means for freedom. And that, once again, is available through RightSourceOnline.com. Hopefully, within the next couple of weeks, once again, the manuscript is ready, and it's just a matter of technical problems getting the whole thing published. My new book, Liberty in Eclipse, The Rise of the Homeland Security State, will be available. And as soon as I find out, I'll let you know, Stan, so we can let your listeners know.
And we'll be glad to carry that here as well. So
thank you.
We'll look forward to that. All right, fine. That's Pro Libertate, is that?
Pro Libertate, yes.
Pro Libertate. Okay, fine. Let me commend it to you and get his information. Now, do you have other books for sale?
I don't right now, but I soon will.
All right, fine. Well, you'll find that William is a fascinating writer. When he was writing for The New American, we always look forward to his articles, and now that we have him writing books, I think you'll all benefit from what he's putting out. We'll pick up the story there.
Yeah, I was talking about the way that our standard of living is being reduced as a matter of deliberate design, I think, by people who profit off of this type of a situation. Most of the time, if you read the writings of people like Lou Dobbs, for instance, Patrick Buchanan tends to reflect this point of view as well. People talk about the obvious, which is the vulgar greed of certain corporate interests and how they obviously have an interest in keeping wage costs low so that the profit margin can increase. And I don't deny that that's, of course, a factor in what we're describing here. But I think that there's something beyond vulgar and obvious greed at work, too, and that is the appetite for power, the libido dominandi, the lust to rule over others, and how there's always been, since time immemorial, on the part of people who aspire to rule over other human beings, there's always been a desire to reduce that population over which you want to exercise dominion to servitude, to dependency. You do not want them to have independent means of supporting themselves and their families. And the United States of America, actually before we became the United States of America, we were still the colonies under British rule, there emerged a new type of human being, and that was what we would now call the bourgeois, the middle class. The middle class American. It was synonymous. If you were American, you were somebody who aspired to what's now called the middle class, meaning you owned your own property, you could transmit your property to your heirs, you could improve it as you saw fit. You deferred to properly constituted authority, but you were not ruled. You were not ruled by a king or a prince or a cleric. You were somebody who was autonomous. And in that new human being, that new man, you know, the Soviet Union always talked about wanting to create a new man. Long before there was the United States, there was a new man called an American. That was something new in the world. And that was the bedrock upon which our institutions were built. And, of course, what's happened is now people are literally find themselves in a situation where if you're an employee of a corporation that's a transnational corporation, you're artificially in competition with people who do not have that same cultural background. Whether you're talking about people in Russia or China or Vietnam, which is increasingly becoming a location for out-migration of jobs and the outsourcing of services and things of that sort. Whether you're talking about that type of a country, another, of course, destination would be India. The Philippines is also very popular. But these are people who are used to the idea that they will have a certain lot in life assigned to them by their betters, and they have no aspirations of improving upon that circumstance. And so our corporate culture is being reconfigured in such a way that people are being taught that mindset. You know, you will be basically owned by the company, and You'll be in competition with people who are making much less, so you have to lower your expectations. Both parents have to work now in order to support the home. That means that the mother can't be home to raise the children, and that means that you might defer having children, or you might forego having children altogether. And that would take us more in the direction of Sweden, where children are seen to be very, very optional, as opposed to being the entire purpose and point of having a family, which is to have children and to raise them and to teach them to be free people, living God's law and respecting each other and improving the life of everybody within their circle of influence. But you take a look at Europe right now. Europe has that type of a system in large measure, and you take a look at what's going on in China and some of these other Asian countries, They're becoming consumerist, which means they have a lot of money to go out and buy all kinds of ephemeral material things, but they're not really free in the sense of being able to improve their circumstances and to understand something about the ultimate nature of existence and live according to the wisdom that God has given them. And that's the direction we're going to as well, I think. We take a look at the all-encompassing materialism of our society. You take a look at the way that corporations now are presuming to dictate the way that their employees will live in realms that are not part of their area of responsibility, how your political views and your after-hours associations are increasingly coming under the scrutiny of employers and so forth. One thing that Paul Craig Roberts, who has been really doing yeoman work on this particular issue, as on many others, has talked about is the way that financial sector, the wizards, the alchemists of finance, have taken over pretty much our entire economy is a symptom of this. Yesterday, as a matter of fact, in a column, Paul Craig Roberts is examining some of these issues. He talks about the idea of phantom productivity. We don't produce anything anymore. We repackage debt. We repackage financial instruments, and production is done overseas. And so, I can't remember who it is. There's some comedian who said that basically all that America produces right now is debt and porn. You know, everything else is produced overseas. And as far as I can tell, a lot of the porn probably is as well. I don't know a whole lot about that subject, I'm proud to say. But in any case, Paul Craig Roberts talking about phantom productivity. It talks about how phantom productivity gains are produced by corporations that shift business costs to consumers by, for example, having callers listen to advertisements while they wait for a customer service representative, and by pricing items in the inflation basket according to low prices of stores that offer customers no service. In America today, the greatest rewards go to investment bankers who collect fees for creating financing packages for debt. These packages include the tottering subprime mortgage derivatives. Recently, a top official of the Bank of France acknowledged that the real values of repackaged debt instruments are unknown to both buyers and sellers. Many of the derivatives have never been priced by the market. Think of derivatives as a mutual fund of debt, a combination of good mortgages, subprime mortgages, credit card debt, auto loans, and who knows what. Not even institutional buyers know what they are buying or how to evaluate it. Arcane pricing models are used to produce values and pay incentives bias the assigned values upwards. Now, what he's saying here is that there are these huge pools of debt that are put together here as what are called derivatives. Nobody knows what goes into them. It's a grab bag. It's an omnium gatherum. It's the secret prize behind door number 3. Nobody knows what goes there. Nobody knows whose debts have been folded into these huge derivatives. So when these companies, or rather these investment instruments, these sovereign wealth funds from abroad, start buying up these derivatives or buying into the bond market with these huge mysterious increments of debt, you don't know where your debt's going to end up. You don't know to whom you're going to be owing this. And, of course, anybody who's had problems with credit cards or mortgages or auto loans or things of this sort and has had his account sold from one collection agency to another can understand that on a very limited and sort of low-ranking sense. It's the same thing happening internationally here, that you've got this huge amount of money that's out chasing these debts, and sooner or later we're going to end up here in a situation where we're not going to own anything in this country. I mean, the entire economy is based upon debt, perpetuating debt, and making profit off of debt. And it's been that way since at least 1913. That's something that Ron Paul always talks about, was how in 1913, when the Federal Reserve was created and it was given the authority to manufacture fiat currency, that essentially our entire economy was then built on debt and fraud. Well, at some point, the people who are producing things now, things that are actually of value, consumer goods from China, energy resources from the Middle East and Russia, natural resources from Brazil, they're going to have the means to come in here and buy up everything, and heavenly knows how we'll end up working things out as far as to whom we owe what and how we're going to make whatever money we can make to end up paying the company store. It's just a perfectly horrifying prospect. And meanwhile, the entire conservative movement, so-called, is talking about the compelling necessity to keep our troops overseas, fighting these wars without end, which are running up a lot of these debts that are driving this process and creating tens of millions or hundreds of millions of enemies for this country, thereby sowing the seeds that will blossom, say, 10, 15 years hence in another generation of wars. It's just the most perfect lunacy.
Yes, I agree with you. And we see what's going on. We wonder why it is that, if you look at the Republican presidential candidates, only one of them opposes the war. Every other one of them firmly supports the war. And, of course, the Democrats supposedly oppose the war. But when we see what happens when the Democrats take over, why they refuse to do anything really effectively to stop it. A lot of posturing, a lot of talking. But I fear that unless the American people really are willing to stand up and say we're not going to go along with this, why we'll go from war to war to war until eventually this country is totally bankrupt, both financially and morally and spiritually.
Yeah, and it's really becoming the, I hate to use the expression because it's become such a battered and threadbare cliche, but it's really becoming a perfect storm where you've got the ever more obvious decrepitude of the dollar in our domestic economy on the one hand, and you've got the obvious weakness for all of our expenditures and all of our high-tech gadgetry and for all of our sophistication. Our military really is just not all that. I'm certain that the performance of our military in Baghdad has not thrown the fear of Washington into Beijing, for instance. And the third factor would be the advanced moral decay that we can see within the United States, where people have become accustomed to the idea that wealth and prominence and success and celebrity are all handed out on a perfectly random basis. And so it has nothing to do, for instance, with husbanding your resources wisely, exercising thrift, working a little bit harder, spending a little bit less on discretionary amenities and luxuries. It has nothing to do with any of these things. Of course, it would have nothing at all to do with maintaining a sound family life and trying to raise children responsibly and things of that sort. None of this has to do with success. Success is simply a roll of a great roulette wheel. It's some inscrutable lottery that ends up delivering to some people what they're after. And so you really should place all your bets on some whimsical possibility that Fortuna will reward you everything that your heart desires. You'll become wealthy beyond your dreams of avarice. Now, the people who built this country didn't believe that. I mean, they were people who lived with very little on the assumption that they owed it to their children to provide for them. Whereas now, we have perpetual childhood, you know, people in their third, fourth, fifth, sixth decades of life, living like adolescents, and, you know, to the point where they not only spend money on things that are childish and spend money childishly, but they end up spending, among other things, on plastic surgery in the hopes of always looking 17 or 18 years old. And we have media which reinforces that type of idolatry. But that's the third dimension of this whole predicament we're in, is the moral decay and the fact that we've got such completely screwed up priorities in our country. You add that to the ever increasing and ever unfolding economic collapse and the foreign debacle that we're now seeing, our imperial foreign policy creating for us, and things really do look grim.
I share your concern. I very much fear that we will be involved in a war with Iran before many more months are out, and we're just going to have to wait and watch and see. But everything suggests now, with the USS Enterprise carrier strike force having moved into the Gulf, along, of course, Persian Gulf, along with the two already present carrier strike task forces, and I think it's only a matter of time until we have sufficient air power there. The Air Force is actually reinforcing its forces, bringing in B-1 bombers, bringing in the planes of all sorts, you know, to strike Iran. And my understanding is that as soon as the Air Force is fully armed, as soon as the naval forces are all in place, why, the six-day war that will destroy Iran's uranium-producing or uranium-enrichment facilities will begin, and then after 6 days, the war is going to end, and everything's going to be fine. And if you really believe that, you're incredibly naive. It's like, do you remember when President Bush landed his plane on the carrier and said, mission accomplished, we've defeated Iraq, the war is over? That was in October of 2003. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program. Our guest has been William Grigg, always fascinating material, and we hope that you'll want to get copies of this program and listen to it again, because, of course, it foretells a very grim future unless there are enough Americans who value freedom that they will join us in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation under God can long endure. Well, this is Dr. Stan William. Got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. Somebody had called in. They're talking about an executive order. 12803 actually was written, issued by George Herbert Walker Bush, about the selling off of our infrastructure of our nation. Are you acquainted with that?
Oh, yeah. That's very much a part of this. I mean, that was a very key element of the same system that was enhanced under Clinton. And there was a real seamless continuity between the first George Bush and Bill Clinton when it came to international trade policy. The idea was that everything was going to go up on the block, including, as we found out, the presidency itself in 1996, actually as early as 1992 or 1990, when the Lippo Group over in Singapore started to invest in Bill Clinton as a presidential candidate, and we found out that paid some really handsome dividends, because you had the spectacle of the presidency pretty much being put up for bids, and Bill Clinton was very much of a mercantilist mindset when it came to, actually mercantilist is the wrong expression, but he was very much creating a bazaar out of our country's wealth and institutions while he was president, and that built on the same perverted frame of mind that you saw in that executive order by the first President Bush. And George W. Bush has really continued in the same tread, and I think that what's likely to happen just in the next 4 or 5 years, especially if we have a severe financial reverse, economic reverse, probably triggered by that war scenario that you outlined, Dr. Stan, is that we're going to be seeing more and more people, not just in government, but people who don't really know what's going on, looking abroad for rescue. I mean, that actually started during Katrina, when we saw how, to use the rather curious locution of George W. Bush, people ponied up with cash dollars to help bail us out of our predicament in Katrina. And to this day, that whole region is still utterly devastated. It's not been rebuilt. We don't have the resources to do it. And so I think that as the infrastructure woes broaden and deepen, you're probably going to see a greater receptivity on the part of at least part of the public for foreign investment and foreign help to rebuild the internal vessel, so to speak. I mean, you know, the Lord tells us we should cleanse the inner vessel first, and we've completely ignored that wisdom, as we've ignored most of his wisdom, unfortunately, as a matter of public policy for many, many decades. And we're at a point now where we're going to have to start paying the price for it, and I really don't like the looks of things.
Well, I don't either, but we're going to have to talk more about that next week, and thank you so very much for being with us, William.
Thank you.
It's always a great privilege to have you as a guest here at Radio Liberty. Good night. God bless. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I do hope that you have enjoyed our programs with William Grigg, as I do every time we have him on, and we hope we can get him on a regular basis, and we hope that you'll see fit to help support him and his ministry as well. William is doing a great job. He's a great patriot. He loves America. Well, of course, this is the time when I do mention that Radio Liberty, my ministry, is primarily listener-supported, and we are able to give people a voice across America, across the world. We have about 60 outlets every single week. Now, a lot of them are just half an hour a week, but at least for half an hour a week, people will hear the truth. So if you'd like to become part of the Radio Liberty family of supporters, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to, Chris, get the copies of any of our programs are available either in tape or CD, and you call that same number, 1-800-544-8927. How do we understand what's really going on? Why we read the Earth Charter? You'll find it included in our Sustainable Development Syllabus, along with a master plan that came out of the Second Earth Summit in 1992. It was written up by Al Gore and Prince Charles, who was part of the Black nobility of Europe and the corporate and banking leaders of America. It was all done on the Prince Charles's royal yacht. This is covered in Joan Vian's book, Prince Charles, the Expendable Prince. We carry the book. And then, of course, for what was really decided, you need to get the Sustainable Development Syllabus, my talk on sustainable development, the road to socialism. We have a four-tape set, but nobody else, of course, includes in anything like the Sustainable Development Syllabus. We have the Earth Charter, the summary of the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report, certainly the material on population control, the World Bank water policy, and understanding that there really are people who have openly said that they want to destroy the infrastructure of America. That would be specifically Marie Strong, who formerly the Assistant Director of the United Nations. And in an interview with West Magazine, he admitted openly that there would be a cabal of people of great wealth who would plot on how they would destroy the financial structure of our nation. Fascinating material. That's the Sustainable Development Syllabus. And then, of course, this goes into my talk on Brotherhood of Darkness, which you must see or read the book. My talk on the Forbidden Secret, DVD, VHS, or the syllabus. We suggest you get them both together. Then, of course, DVD, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings. The DVD, Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. Because, you see, America was always meant to be the nation that would bring the world to the New World Order, the New World Religion, the New World Leader. Long-term planning for hundreds of years. That's why you'll need to get the DVD by Chris Pitto, The Atlantis Connection, because America was to become the new Atlantis. An excellent, excellent talk. Certainly Constance Cumby's talk, available on DVD, entitled The Emergence. And, of course, what's the emergence of the new world leaders, ladies and gentlemen? There is a new world leader. He's ready to come onto the scene. It's only a matter of time. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927 or 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Because America is under attack from within today by people who have a different world vision because they worship a different God. So please, of course, tell others about our program, encourage them to listen, and then, of course, pray for America. Pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.
Tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.